We'll do a little bit of a little bit on the Megillah. Chazal tell us that Shlomo HaMelech built a very special throne. He built a throne that had many animals that used to move within that throne. This throne was the desire of many kings. When finally Paro captured that throne, tried climbing onto it, and the automatic hand of the lion that moved to lift his leg knocked his leg out of place, and he limped. That's why it's called Paro Necho, Paro the limp, Paro the cripple. Achashverosh, he knew he wanted that throne. He got the wealth of Egypt. He saw the throne, but he didn't dare climb on it because he was scared of what would happen. So he brought in architects and engineers to try and figure out how they can make a throne like Shlomo HaMelech's throne, and they couldn't. They couldn't make one like Shlomo HaMelech's throne, but they can make one that looked like Shlomo HaMelech's throne. And so they made a model that looked like Shlomo HaMelech's throne. And then what Achshverosh did was he sat down on the throne. Being that he's sitting on top, so no one knew whether he had been able to ascend the throne the way Shlomo HaMelech's throne was built, or he just sat down on top. So everyone thought that this was Shlomo's throne and he had ascended the throne. And so he made this big party in which he's sitting on top of the throne and everyone thinks this is Shlomo's throne. Really wasn't. And in that party he wants to strengthen his throne. Now, Achashverosh was a stable boy. He was being charged with the horses for Nebuchadnezzar. But he made his way up in the ranks, and he was very wealthy, and he finally became king. So, what? No, I don't know of a medrash that says that about Achashverosh. So Achashverosh makes this party after 3 years that his engineers have been working to make a Paro. Paro had a son-in-law named Shlomo. When he saw the throne, he always wanted the throne. And when Shlomo HaMelech died, he figured out a way of waging war and ultimately getting the throne. So long story. Shlomo HaMelech built the throne with his wisdom. Paro always wanted the throne. A son-in-law. Shlomo married Paro's daughter, Fat Paro. So now, after 3 years that they finally made a throne that looks like similar to Shlomo's throne, they make this party, and Achashverosh is sitting on the throne, and he's showing off his wealth, and he makes the party, and after that he makes a party for the people of Shushan, the people of his capital. Now, when he makes this party for the people of Shushan, his wife Vashti makes a party for the women. And the idea is that on Shabbos, they'll take away the mechitza, and the men and women will mix, and then there'll be a lot of promiscuity going on in the party. Now, they invite everyone. They invite all the Jews, and they invite all the people, and their thought is to cause the Jews to sin. And they advertise that it's kosher. They say we'll have kosher food and kosher wine, and everyone should come. And we want everyone here. And the Jews think we should be loyal citizens, and what could be so terrible? It's a kosher party. There's going to be kosher food. The king wants to be nice to us. Why shouldn't we go? And Mordechai goes around saying, don't go to that party. No, 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 you're not allowed to participate. It's prohibited to sit down and drink wine with non-Jews. The Torah doesn't want us intermarrying. The Torah says we have to watch ourselves from intermarrying. Part of watching ourselves from intermarrying is not attending bars with non-Jews, not going to parties with them. You don't go to a New Year's party with them because you might meet a nice girl there. And the Torah doesn't want you to intermarry. So Mordechai is getting up at the podium and speaking publicly and telling the Jews, don't go. And the Jews want to be good citizens, so they do go. And they show up to the party, and Ahasuerus takes out the vessels of the temple on the Shabbos. He takes out the royal vessels, and he takes out the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash. And Hashem says, oh, you fool. There was someone before you who took out the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, and he got punished. He lost his throne that night. That's when the Babylonian Empire was destroyed, and the Persian Mede Empire took over. You're repeating, and you're adding to his sin, you're sitting here and you're drinking, and you're going to use the holy vessels. That was the story of Daniel. We will learn about Bezrat Shem on Sunday. So, in our class in Daniel, on Sunday, Bezrat Shem will learn it. So, Ahasuerus gets things, Hashem gets things going in the party. And Ahasuerus starts talking to his officers, and when he's talking to the officers, so what do they talk about? They talk about women. So this officer says, oh, the women in my city, they're so beautiful, and he starts describing how beautiful they are, and the ones in... The other one says, oh, are you kidding? You know how many women I sleep with? I know all the beautiful women in my territory, and they're much more beautiful. And they're all talking, and Ahasuerus finally says, you guys, you don't know what beauty is. You have women from these locations. I'm with a woman who's not from your location, or from your location, or from your location. I'm with a woman who's different than all your women. She's a Chaldean. She's the Nebuchadnezzar's granddaughter, and she's the essence of beauty. She's more beautiful than all your women. So they're all drinking wine. What do they say? Let's see. Your woman is here. So Ahasuerus sends word to Vashti, and he tells her, now that we're going to ramp up the party, now you come in, and when you come in unclothed, and then we'll get things moving. You and I will have it out in front of everyone, and then we'll bring in the other women, and things will get exciting over here. Now, that was their plan. Vashti was an unusually cruel queen. She would force Jewish girls to work in her house on Shabbos, and she'd take the modest Jewish girls and force them to work unmodestly without their clothes and in places where people could see them. So Hashem said, this is what you're doing to the modest Jewish girls, I'll pay you back on Shabbos. So on that Shabbos, Vashti was very excited when Ahasuerus sends her word and says, come on in this way. She was going to show off her beauty. And God made it that as she's standing and preparing to go, a pimple appears. So, in those days they had all kinds of cosmetics, just like today. She gets her girls to come in and they start covering up the pimple. And they cover up one pimple and another one appears. So they cover up the next one and another one appears. And she's breaking out all over. And it reaches a point where she can't cover it. And Chazal tell us that Hashem made her grow a tail. So now she looks behind and suddenly she has a tail. And what's wrong? Something's very funny. Something's happening here. So she's all pressured. Ahasuerus has this plan set up with her. She's supposed to come in. And they're supposed to get things going, and now she can't come in. She's lost her beauty. So she doesn't know what to say. The king sends his officers. What's going on? Vashti, we're all waiting. Come in with your crown, he says. He's telling her, come in with the crown and nothing else. And Vashti sends back word. You tell him, you drunk, you stable boy. What are you telling me to come in like that? So Ahasuerus gets this message back. He doesn't know what hit him. Wait a second. Why is she answering me this way? Ahasuerus gets very upset. So, he doesn't know what to do. She answers me in such a disrespectful way. He sends word, he says, I'm drunk. Let me consult with the rabbis. So he calls in the rabbis and he asks them, what should I do? You, Yisachar, you, the tribe of judges, what do you recommend I do? So the rabbis say, we have to convene. We'll get back to you. They sit down, they convene, and they say, this guy's drunk. Today he's drunk, tomorrow he'll be sober. When he'll be sober, he'll be very upset at whatever he does now. Technically, a queen that answers the king this way should get the death penalty. But If he kills her now, he'll never forgive himself, and he'll never forgive us for giving him that advice. So they send word back to Ahasuerus. They say, look, this is a question of the death penalty. Ever since we've been exiled, we don't rule on questions of the death penalty. We can't answer you. We don't have our wisdom. Go to this nation, go to that nation. They've been sitting in one place. They have their wisdom. We've been traveling. We've lost our wisdom. We can't give you this advice. So they bail out. They don't give him advice. So he goes to his other advisors, and they tell him what kind of chutzpah she talks to you like that. If she talks to you like that, you know, this is the beginning of women's lip. Word's going to get out to all the women who are at her party that she told you, you stable boy, don't you tell me what to do. And then all the women are going to come home and tell their husbands, you hear? The queen doesn't let the king boss her around. Don't you boss me around. In this country, we don't live like that. And you're going to have the men very upset at you because everyone's going to have trouble in their homes because of what's happening here. You have to teach her a lesson. You have to show her who's boss. So hang her. And when you hang her, not only will you get rid of the problem with her, but you will also gain the fondness of all your constituents. Everyone will come home and say, I am the boss in the house. So the Ahasuerus is drunk. He says, great idea. So he writes out a law, sends a decree to everyone. I want you to know, Vashti spoke disrespectful to me, so I hung her. And from now on, the law is the man, he runs the show in his house, and the woman has to listen to the husband. And if she doesn't listen to the husband, oh, she's going against the law. And they speak the husband's language in the house. If they both speak two different languages or two dialects, she has to bow her head to the husband and speak his language. And then they hang Vashti. This letter goes out. The citizens read the letter and they say, what's wrong with this king? What's interfering with how we live our lives? This guy's a fool. This guy might be king over the world, but he's an outright fool. And the fact that Ahasuerus sent out that letter when he was drunk, that ultimately saved the Jewish people. Because then when Ahasuerus sends out a decree a few years later saying, you know what, in a year's time you could kill the Jews. So the people say, wait a second, we know this guy. He sends out funny letters. We got to wait and see if he really stands by his guns. Maybe he'll change his mind, which he really did. We know, then the Megillah changed his mind. So the fact that he sent out this silly letter, that saved the Jews ultimately. Because if not for this silly letter, then later on, when Ahasuerus sends out the letter saying you'll be able to kill the Jews in a year's time, no one would have waited the year. They would have put their people together, taken up arms, and killed out the Jews right away. So this funny letter ultimately saved the Jews later on. Yeah?
So why does it usually start objecting when something's bad? What did it bad?
So the Gemara says, "Afilu pardashcha." Even the guy who has the simplest job, he works in the field. He's in charge of a garden. He's a gardener, which in Chazal's time was the simplest job. What does he do? He's out there in the garden watching that the birds don't eat from the food, from the crops. He doesn't have a very, very high-paying job. It's the lowest-paying job. It's in Chazal's time, that was the example of a lowest job. Even he, in his own house, he's king. That was a given in their time. Don't forget, you're talking about a time where Chazal tell us it was a given that people beat their wives. So Chazal say, a Jew is not supposed to beat his wife. But Chazal say, make sure you marry off your daughter to someone who's educated so he knows he's not allowed to beat his wife. If you marry off your daughter to a Jew who's uneducated, so you might as well bind her and put her in the lion's den, because that's what you're going to do. Because uneducated people, they beat up their wives. That's what the Gemara says. That's what the Gemara says. People are educated, they know you're not allowed to hit your wife. She's a human being. You're not allowed to hit her. The Torah prohibits it. But people are uneducated, they don't know that. They don't forget, the Amearites in those times were illiterate. They didn't know Shema, they didn't know benching, they didn't know anything. So Chazal say, you're not allowed to marry your daughter up to someone like that. He doesn't know any mitzvahs, he's going to beat her up. You don't do that to your daughter. So you see, it was a given even within the Jewish people that the people who were illiterate and didn't know anything about what the Torah says, they were beating their wives. So all the more so, people who had no such law to begin with, the non-Jews, it was a given. So no wife, if she knew what life was about, she didn't open her mouth to her husband. He'd beat the daylights out of her. So Chazal say that when they got the letter, they said, "What does he have to tell me? I'm boss in my house. My wife doesn't dare open her mouth to me." The Gemara says that there's a difference between a Jewish couple and a non-Jewish couple. A non-Jewish couple, so if there's a good-looking girl in the room, he might cheat on his wife in her face. He doesn't care that his wife is around. So then there's a prohibition of yichud, that a Jewish girl shouldn't be caught alone in the room with him, even though his wife is in the room. Because the fact that his wife is in the room won't stop him. A Jewish person, so the Gemara says, even though he might cheat on his wife a different time, but when she's in the room, he won't dare cheat on her. He won't dare cheat on her in front of her. That's a given. So that's relevant to the laws of Yichud, that we say, if a Jewish girl is in the room, there's only a man there and his wife, we're not worried that he'll do something improper. Because the Jewish relationship is such that the way the Torah guides us to build a relationship, even at a time where the nations were beating up their wives and doing whatever they wanted, but within Judaism, this much, even the non-learned, then they knew that they wouldn't cheat on their wives in front of them. That they wouldn't do. So it's relevant to the laws of Yichud also. But in the nations, Mar says even in front of her, he would cheat on her. He didn't care. So the wife was just a servant of the husband. I mean, her job was to serve him. You see the way it says in the textbooks. I mean, her job was to have, I could show you an article from 50 years ago, from Good Housekeeping, what a good wife is. Yeah, did I ever show you this article? There was an article in Reader's Digest, I think. In Reader's Digest, there was an article 50 years ago, what's a good wife? So it says over there, have the house ready when your husband comes home. The kids should be fed and quiet and clean. And he's worked a long, hard day. Don't talk too much when he comes home. Be quiet and have the meal ready for him. Have everything ready. He comes home. He's the king of the house. You'll see this Reader's Digest 50 years ago, not 2,000 years ago. Hey, this was a given in the United States of America 50 years ago, how the wife has to have everything set up just so he shouldn't be bothered. The kids shouldn't be noisy. God forbid he should help her. No, that's not part of the marriage. No. She has to have everything set up for him because he's king of the house. Bezat Shem, remind me. I'll show you the article. They all looked at one another and they said, what's wrong with this king? This is what he has to tell us. We run the show in the house. Achashverosh, after the party, he wakes up and he's sober. He remembers Vashti. He says, who gave me this advice? Wait a second. Who told me to kill her? He calls in those advisors, hacks off their heads. What'd you tell me to kill her for? Now I'm without my wife, my beloved wife. And he misses her. He really thought she was the most beautiful woman in the world. So he has a problem. So he just killed off his advisors. What's he going to do? So he doesn't have advisors. He has lads. So the lads tell him, look, you remember all your officers. They know all the good-looking women wherever they are. So you tell them that they all have to send their good-looking women to you. And you'll choose a wife. And you'll have representatives in each country. You're master of the world. Achshverosh was king over the whole world. He was king over all inhabited areas. And they'll gather all good-looking girls to Shushan. Married, non-married, doesn't matter. You're king. You take whichever woman you want. So they gather all the women into this. They have a harem of Achshverosh. And in that harem, they have people giving them, setting them up. They'd spend 6 months in this kind of ointment, 6 months in that kind of ointment, to remove all hairs, to make the skin soft, to be fit, to be a potential queen. So Achshverosh likes the idea, and they set this up. Now, every good Jewish person hid their daughters. Every intelligent person hid their daughter, because what happened? Every night he'd sleep with a different girl. And any girl he slept with, once the king slept with her, she can't go free. I mean, maybe he'll want her again. So they had a second harem where she'd spend the rest of her life in case he ever wants her again. But she wouldn't go home to her husband. She wouldn't go home to her family. That's it. She was stuck. So any intelligent person took his daughter and hid her. What does he want Achashverosh to take his daughter for? Or hid his wife if she was good looking. Because Achashverosh was taking any woman that was good looking. In Shushan, in the capital, there was a person who was one of the sages of the time, and his name was Mordechai. And Mordechai was a descendant of Shaul HaMelech, and he was one of the sages that had been exiled. Mordechai was over 70 years old. He was an old man. And Mordechai had a niece named Hadassah. And Hadassah, when her mother became pregnant, her father died. And when her mother gave birth, she died at childbirth. So when Hadassah was born, she was orphaned. And Mordechai adopted her. He took her into his home. And when she grew old enough, he married her. There's a special mitzvah in the Torah that a person should marry his niece, especially in a situation where she's an orphan and there's no one to really take care of her. So the Torah tells us a special mitzvah: take care of your nieces. One is prohibited from marrying one's aunt, and one has a special, I don't know if we would call it a mitzvah, but the Torah looks fondly about a person who doesn't let his nieces go off, especially in a situation like this. All of the Jewish people were exiled. People were being sold into slavery. Women were being taken into prostitution. And he has this little niece. No one's there for her. So Mordechai took her into his home and married her. Now, she was very good looking. And when all the girls were gathered, so she went into hiding. But the king's officers were going house to house checking, and they found her. So even though they tried their best that she shouldn't be taken, she was taken. And Esther...
Were there other Jews taken?
There were other Jews, sure. They were gathering women, whoever they thought was good looking.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
So, Esther is taken by force. Other people gave their daughters, hoping their daughters might be queen. Haman had a daughter who he really wanted should be queen. He kept pushing her. But the Jews and anyone who had intelligence hid their daughter, because think about it. What are the odds that your daughter is the one the king's going to choose? So Esther is there in the harem. And in the harem, she's surrounded by non-Jews. And
there were also Jews there.
But Mordechai told her, look, Esther, you come from a royal family. And if Ahasuerus hears that, Ahasuerus is a person who has no royal blood. He got to the throne from the stable. He ensured to be connected to royal blood by marrying Vashti. Odds are he's going to want royal blood again. He's going to want someone from a royal family because that gives more legitimacy to his throne. So when you enter that harem, you don't tell anyone where you're from, so they can't research you. Don't tell them what family you're from. Don't tell them what nationality you're from. Because if they know where you're from, they'll research who you are. They'll find out you have royal blood. And then your odds are higher that you'll become queen. So we want you out of there. Don't tell who you are. Don't tell them where you're from. Now, Esther's over there. And Esther's modest. She's not interested in all this. And Haggai sees there's an exceptional girl here. All the other girls are telling him, bring me this perfume, bring me that. And Esther isn't interested in all of this. Esther, we're talking about a woman who had such refined traits that God spoke to her. She was one of the seven female prophetess. She was an exceptional woman. Esther had prophecy, just like we have Jeremiah the prophet. We have Esther the prophet. So Esther is spending her time working on herself to be a better person, learning Torah, and she sees that in the harem she could easily lose count of what the days of the week are. How's she going to know what day is Sunday, Monday, Tuesday? How's she going to know? So she has seven girls who are there to serve her. They're her servants. And she changes their names. It was customary in ancient times when you got a servant that you gave him the name. You gave him his nickname. And that was a sign of ownership. That's why Moshe changes Hosea's name to Yehoshua. It's a sign of ownership. Paro, when he takes Yosef as his officer, he changes his name to Tzofnas Paneah. You're my servant. I define your name. So also we learned in Daniel that Daniel was given another name by Yabba.
They did that even a century ago.
Yeah. I didn't know that. So Esther names her servants This one she names the sun. This one she names the plants. She named them based on what was created on the days of the week. And this way she knew when this servant came in, it was Sunday. When this servant came in, it was Monday. When this servant came in, it was Shabbos. She'd know when Shabbos was, and this way she could maintain her Jewish identity. So Esther is over there. And day after day, Mordechai went to see how she was doing. And I think it was the Gerer Rebbe that said that Mordechai merited to save the Jewish people, that great salvation would be through him, because he'd never missed a day. Day after day, Mordechai went to the gates to see how she was doing. You know, if a person, God forbid, has a relative in the hospital, so they visit them. They visit them, yeah, once a week, twice a week, but every day, most people don't, they don't live up to that day. How many people call their parents every day? Yeah, that's the kibbutz that we could do, calling our parents. Mordechai didn't miss a day. Every day he knew, my Esther, she's stuck over there in that harem. I have to come every day. If there's a day that I don't come, so I'm taking away that strength from her. So every day Mordechai went to the gates. Every day she knew she'd see her uncle, her husband Mordechai, at the gates. And that's a very important message. You know, very often us men, we have strength to start many things. But consistency is something that men are weak at. Women are very good at being consistent. Men are good at starting new things. Consistency is not our strength. That's something we all have to learn from Mordechai. Day after day, and it was for years, that Mordechai went to that gate to see what was doing. Now, every girl, when she would come to the king, she'd have a choice what to bring along with her. What form of entertainment, what music, what perfumes. She had a choice, and she'd come at night. Ahasuerus would spend the night with her. And then the next morning, she'd be sent to harem number two, to Shashgaz, who was in charge of all the women who Ahasuerus had been with once. And then she'd never be called back unless the king remembered her and wanted to call her again. And it came Esther's turn. And Esther knows that now it's going to be her turn to go before Ahasuerus. You could imagine how revolting that day was in Esther's mind. Here she doesn't want to be here. She has no interest in doing this. And she's being forced. Esther could all but spit in his face. And Esther knows that today is the day. And this is where we'll have to pick up next time.